So my take-home message for you all today, whether you're an extension or whether you're a researcher, is that you can not use a neonicotinoid and get as much management as you want for any of the sucking insects, which are common in greenhouse, if you use pimetrazine, trade name Endeavor. And so I have data I'm going to present today to convince you of that. So I want to start out by convincing you that systemic insecticides, and the neonicotinoids are all systemic, is where this whole controversy starts and why this is a problem on all beneficial insects that feed on pollen and nectar. When the neonics were first registered in 1990, imidacloprid was the first active ingredient, we were told that they didn't get into pollen and nectar because it mostly stayed in xylem and didn't go over to phloem. And it took about 10 years for us to figure out it did get into phloem in high enough numbers to get into pollen and nectar. And so if you use a contact insecticide, which you just spray on a crop, any greenhouse contact insecticide, it only stays on the plant for about a week, longer in greenhouse and field crop because UVB light denatures it. But the systemics get into the plant itself, they move throughout the plant, and they're apically dominant, so they keep shifting up to the top of the plant. I'm going to show you data in greenhouse plants. It's still there after 10 weeks, but in woody plants, it can be there still after 2 years. So the whole controversy is that neonicotinoids, because they're systemic, are stored in the plant, and you go from using a contact, which will only kill a bee for a week, to a neonicotinoid, which can kill a bee for 2 years. So that's a major part of the controversy. The next part to get us all on the same page is that in horticulture, we use much higher rates than they do in field crops. So there's an amount, a limit of active ingredient per acre, which you can translate to square foot, and that's what I've done for you. So a standard seed treatment is 0.1 milligram, 4 milligram per square foot in ag, but for nursery you can use 300 milligrams. So that's 150 times more in a 3-gallon pot. The next thing is, here's the comparison between the LD50, the toxicity of a neonicotinoid, and DDT. Neonicotinoids are 27,000 times more toxic than DDT was. So they're very highly toxic to bees. The thing about the neonicotinoids is the French, in 1996, when imidacloprid was first used as a seed treatment, noticed the effects on bees right away. They called it mad bee disease because the bees wouldn't forage right. And I want you to remember this because they were looking at sublethal levels. And this is the big controversy and the problem, that the EPA registers pesticides based on LD50 lethal levels to 50% of the population, but you go from 4 nanogram per bee for an LD50 down to 0.1 nanogram per bee when you have sublethal effects on behavior. So the beekeepers started in 1996. I'm not going to read through all these different issues, but 2018, April 28th this year, the European Union banned the use of neonicotinoids on all field crops, flowering field crops, including wheat, and on some greenhouse uses, but not all greenhouse uses. In Minnesota, we've been very proactive about this. We had a Governor Dayton who was on board until this November, and he created some legislation where we're reviewing neonics used in agriculture, neonics used in greenhouse. And we're the first state to have a bee labeling law, which amongst you who work in greenhouse has caused a lot of issues, but basically put a limit on how much residue there can be in a flower if you use it in greenhouse production. So this is one of my first studies in 3-gallon pots, and I use these 5 different species, anise, hyssop, tropical milkweed, roses, canola, and Bignoniaceae yellowbells. And this is a lot of data here, but the first column is how much milligrams I put in the soil, and I expected, like everyone, to make a nice little regression line, figure out how much you put in, how much you get out, but you can't. It varies tremendously by species. But if you go down below the black bar, the horizontal is 300 milligrams, that's the 1X, the label rate, you see a black print back numbers with an asterisk, and then in parentheses you see something in blue. So I convert how much is in the flower to how much is in pollen, and the limit usually everyone gives is about 100 parts per billion in a flower, and you see all those blue numbers are above 100 parts per billion, and you see if I directly measure rose pollen or canola pollen or a second set of rose pollen, it's all above the amount. So within a summer, within a 4 or 5 month period, in all of these studies, the residue is high enough to continue to kill a bee 5 months after application. I want you to look at that orange column. This is how many dead bees I actually find in the field on anise hyssop, and you see at the 300 milligrams, the 1x label rate, the bees are dying with their proboscis in the flowers, so it's killing them in the field. All right, so here's a greenhouse study my Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association helped fund, and so I was going to look at smaller pots to see if by the time you sell a plant, does it have imidacloprid and dinotefuran residue. So I took the tilia data out because I don't have enough time to talk to you, the linden data, but I'm going to present the million bell and prairie petunia data to you. So I made it in this table because it ended up easier to read. So you see the rows say imidacloprid, dinotefuran, pimetrazine, and then imidacloprid, dinotefuran, pimetrazine again. And the top three are the prairie petunia, the bottom three are the yellow bells. So the first thing I want you to notice, the yellow pimetrazine line, there is never a residue. So if you go back to what I said to you at the beginning, I'm going to convince you that you can use pimetrazine, which works great against sucking insects. There is no residue in the flowers. So that's perfect. If you look at imidacloprid, and I read the column headings, we have first 5 weeks whole flower, 5 weeks what's in pollen, 10 weeks after you start using the imidacloprid or the dinotefuran, and 10 weeks. And if you look at the first two lines, imidacloprid is 125 parts per billion, still high enough to actually kill a bee. The dinotefuran by 10 weeks is 22 parts per billion. That's an effect that I'm going to show you some data that affects the behavior of bees. If we go down to the second plant species, again, you see 96 parts per billion 10 weeks for imidacloprid and 96 for dinotefuran. And the difference is the size of the pots, how much you're applying, and the growth rate of the plants. So there was some publications done by the Friends of the Earth, and they said that in three publications over 3 years where they went to garden centers and collected plants and measured neonic levels, they found that 62% of the plants they purchased contained a residue from 2 to 879 parts per billion. So I've just showed you experimentally. This is real at 10 weeks, 10 weeks being about the time you would sell something. And now they have come to the same data, just doing an empirical correlative study. All right, so does this really affect bees, these sublethal levels? So it's really hard to work with bees in the field because you have to create enough food for them. So we potted up 300 plants that we grow every year, and we have two replicate sites that we fill with 150 potted plants of their favorite species that absolutely produce the pollen and nectar they need. And these are just pictures, these two replicate plots at the University of Minnesota. So what I was looking at, if we remember that level of dinotefuran was 22 parts per billion after 10 weeks, we used 20 parts per billion imidacloprid, which is in what, 2016, the EPA said should have no effects on behavior. Okay, 20 parts per billion should have no effects on behavior. So that's why we did the study, to complement the greenhouse study. So we grow bumblebee colonies outside for 11 weeks. We score them every week. We measure how much they eat. We do behavioral tests on movement. So this is just a tiny bit of our data in 10 minutes. It's hard to present enough data. My goal is just to present enough so that you believe me. So this is bee movement. You see the pink is the treated imidacloprid, and you see there's a huge difference in one behavior, their ability to move. And every paper you read, there's about 2,000 good papers now on neonic effects on native and managed honeybees. They all talk about this effect on foraging. They can go out and nectar forage, but when they have to pollen forage and take with their proboscis and their feet the pollen out of the flower, spit on it, and stick it on their corbicula, they can't do it. They can nectar forage, but they have a lot of time doing the multitasking pollen foraging. So this is sugar syrup consumption you see in the treated colonies over these 37 days post-treatment. The amount that they're feeding on is decreasing. And this is the second replicate of that, and you see the same thing. If we look at number of brood cells, again, the red being the treated, it's decreasing. And again, for a second replicate in August, it's decreasing. So I want you to, this is not only two plots each month, but 2 months. So it's a lot of data. And so in conclusion, what I want to say is that honeybees are much more resilient than native bees to neonicotinoids. And some of the reason is the queen never forages. In native bee colonies, the queen is always foraging. Honeybees have 50,000 workers at the end of the year. At the end of their life cycle, they go out and forage for nectar and pollen. So if that bee disappears, it doesn't matter. Bumblebees, they forage throughout their life and bring it back to the colony. Bumblebees will forage at any age. And the other thing is honeybees have a secretion from their hypopharyngeal gland on their head that makes a chemical that detoxifies the nectar and the pollen, so it reduces the pesticide load. And it's unique to honeybees. Bumblebees don't have that. So in conclusion, the field study says the no observable effect limit that EPA said of 20 parts per billion is not true. It affects behavior, consumption, brood production, and so it's negatively correlated. So in summary of all this research, neonicotinoid residue in greenhouse plants is higher than residue from fuel crops. Exception would be dust at planting, good nation when the tips of plants drop liquid containing neonics or water puddles. Honeybee colonies are less susceptible to neonics, and bumblebees in lab and field studies are very sensitive, starting at 20 parts per billion, which is quite a low level for those found in plants and considerably lower than what I found at 10 weeks for both imidacloprid and dinotefuran. So I hope this convinces you to talk to your growers and yourself when you're managing plants to stick to pimetrazine. Pimetrazine freezes the muscles and the siphon of sucking insects. It has no effect on insects with chewing mouth parts. So it's a very reliable choice. And I've done this research because you hear all the time, if we get neonics out of our toolbox, we have nothing against sucking insects. And there's another similar compound called flocinamide produced by another company called Aria. And so I did it to show you there are things in the toolbox. So any questions?
You have about 3 minutes for questions.
Either I did a really good job or a really bad job. So in the leaves, it's a tremendous, like, 20,000 parts per billion. In the flowers, the first year, it's, like, 50, and the next year, it's, like, 80. And these are huge tilia, huge linden trees. So my data says I'm still doing work. Now I'm testing all this data by following a company around who does imidacloprid injections, and they always say 2 years. So 2 summers, it should work. Inject the third spring.
So how do you protect
the bees if you're going to? Well, Bayer was very proactive. On their labels, they put you can't use imidacloprid on linden trees. But the other companies, it's off patent. The other company labels don't say that. So we have a huge problem around the Midwest with Japanese beetles. And again, going back to my first few slides, use a contact insecticide. Don't use a systemic.